What I wanted to talk about was when Jesus, after Jesus was tempted for 40 days of fasting, and he was tempted by the devil, and the devil said, I'll give you this, I'll give you that, I'll give you this, and the Lord said, no, I've already got it all anyhow. You can't tempt me, you can't defeat me. And then he went, and what did he do? The first thing he did was go out and start preaching the heaven, God is coming. He started preaching the word. He started where people started to recognize, wow, listen to him. Listen to this person. He didn't just walk out and say, here I am. No. He started to speak and to teach. But then what he did is he started taking his disciples, which was very strange, because the rabbinical teachers of the time, they didn't go out and get their students. Their students came to them. They would be in a building, and the student would come and say, please teach me. And they'd say, you're not worthy. You're not good enough. You're not learning enough. Okay, you I'll take because you've got money and you can learn. Jesus went out and got his disciples. In Matthew 4, 18 through 21, it says, and Jesus walked by the Sea of Galilee, saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and Andrew his brother, casting nets in the sea, for they were fishers. And he said unto them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. And straightway they left their nets and followed him. And going on from there, he saw another two brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother. They were in the ship with Zebedee, their father, mending their nets, and he called them, and they immediately left the ship and their father and followed him. What's amazing here is that Jesus not only went out and said, I'm picking you, I'm picking you, I'm picking you. They dropped everything to come running. Can you imagine how their father felt when this rabbinical teacher, this godly man, who normally would be sitting in a classroom waiting for you, came and he chose my children. Can you believe it? I'm going to dance in this. My kids were chosen. He came and got them, and they most likely weren't even done with all the education that normally they would have before they go into the studies. But he chose them. He came and said, come here. Fishermen. You can see that by the two, they're all fishermen, but the first two, they are laborers on a fishing boat. They work for someone. You can tell because it's not saying it's their boat, it's their ship. So they're just common, everyday labor people, simple people. But God chose them first. And then as he went on, he runs across two more brothers, James and John, and he said, come on, come with me. They left their father's boat, so it was a family business. There was a little bit more wealth there. There was a little bit more, not so much education, but there was a little bit more status. So he went and he got these two brothers as well. And what's amazing is he just continued to go on. He didn't one day go through and get all 12 disciples. But he walked and he taught and he took those disciples with him to learn from him in a different manner than what they would have learned had they gone through all their education. It would have been different. The educational system back then was different. And then in Matthew 9:9, it says, "And Jesus passed forth from hence and saw a man named Matthew sitting and receiving a custom. And he said it unto him, Follow me. And he rose and followed him." He was a publican. He was the most hated of all the Jews. He was hated more by the Jews than the Romans, because what he was doing was taking their lives, taking their taxes, telling them how much they had to pay for their taxes. He had troops behind him to ensure that you gave your money, even if you couldn't afford it. Didn't matter. He was a Jew that they felt was betraying the Jews. He was hated above everybody else. And who did Jesus walk up to him and says, "Come follow me. I'm calling you. You're somebody everybody hates, but I'm calling you. I'm bringing you to me." And then Jesus continued on, and he got all the other disciples as he went through. There's not a whole lot in the Gospels about what each one of the disciples did for a living, but you can rest assured they weren't scholars, they weren't leaders of society and wealthy and the sons of wealthy people. They were those that were, in many cases, very poor, not having much to offer. And, I mean, it's funny because they then did some things within the group. Judas Iscariot was the treasurer for the apostles. Because you ever notice there's a lot of times where Jesus says, "Well, go buy this, go buy that." Well, they had to have the money to do it with. And so they had pooled money together, and Judas was in charge of that money. And he went through and did the buying. Ironically, that would be the one that would take 30 pieces of silver to betray the Lord. But see, education at that time, I want to just touch a little bit on the educational scope at that time. And in many cases, it's still there today in the Jewish community. But it would start off at 5 years old, and it was only boys. Girls weren't allowed to go to school at that time. But it would start off at 5 years old. From 5 to 10, is when they would start learning to read and write. They wrote in Hebrew. They read the Torah. They studied the Torah. And for the first 5 years of their education, they learned how to study and read and know what the Torah read, the first 5 books of the Bible. So they read through all of those. And then from 10 to 15, they would study the law. And they also took the vowels away from their alphabet, because in the Hebrew language has no vowels. So they took the vowels away and they had to learn that. But then they were learning the law. What does the law tell me? What am I supposed to do? What they were doing was trying to build them to be good Jewish followers that followed the law, because the law is very important, and it still is to them today. They're still under the law, where we're not. But we still have those laws, or there's nothing wrong with them. But So it was important then, from 15 to 20, that's when you had to start paying for your education, for your training. And they started testing to see at that age, are you good enough? Do you know enough? And they would go and start studying the Talmuds, depending on the instructor, whether you would be studying the Babylonian Talmud or you would be studying the Jerusalem Talmud. There were two Talmuds. So depending on who your instructor was, that's what you would study. So then from there, from 20 to 30, if you were really, really good, then you went into rabbinical studies, where you were going to become a rabbi, you were going to be a teacher, you were going to be going on from there. That was why from 20 to 30, and then you'd start your ministry at 30. That was the reason Jesus didn't start his ministry till he was 30 years old, because he wouldn't have been accepted if he'd have done it any sooner. So that was just a little side note there, that's why he didn't do that. But what's interesting is that the ones God chose would have been people that you wouldn't expect him to choose. But what's amazing is Jesus chose, and what he was telling us by doing this, by taking these people, these average, just some down in their luck people, some hated people, and he said, I'm choosing you. Jesus has told us through his blood, I'm choosing you. I'm choosing all of you. I'm going to be here. Come follow me. The choice is yours. I'm choosing you. Come follow me. Come now, come to me. But you know, it's funny, in the Old Testament, that I'm not going to give the verses, all the verses and everything, but in the Old Testament, for instance, I'll just give the, in Genesis, don't put it up, but in Genesis 37 through 50 is the story of Joseph. And you look at Joseph. Here he was the father's choice. He was actually kind of a, from what I read, he was more of a kind of a spoiled brat. I'm going to go tell daddy. That's why his brothers didn't like him. That's why his brothers started to hate him, because he tattled on them. He ran and told daddy everything that was going on. And he was the favorite. And that's why he had the coat of many colors, and he was daddy's favorite. But then he was taken down, thrown in a pit, and then sold off into slavery, and eventually wound up as a slave in Egypt. Here I'm the pride and joy of my daddy. I'm right there. Oh, okay, wait a minute. I'm over here and working as a slave, and if I don't do right, they'll beat me. My father never beat me. Oh, I can't believe this. Whoa, what a disaster. But then he gained some access, he gained some popularity in Potter's house and everything, and he was elevated again, thinking, oh, here it goes, I'm back on top. And then he turned around, and Potiphar's wife accused him falsely, and he gets thrown in prison. And while in prison, he's suffering through everything, and then from there, of course, he has the dreams and he interprets dreams. And the butler and the pastry chef, the chef, he gives the two dreams, and one is killed and one is exalted back to his position. And several years go by. Now he's got to be thinking, God, what are you doing to me? I'm still in prison. What did I do? I'm in prison. And then he leads him further and brings him to the point that he is raised up, interprets the dream, and Pharaoh makes him second in command. He is exalted higher than any, and because of that, he's able to save Israel. He's able to save his brothers, his family, his entire nation. But he stayed true to God. He stayed steadfast with God. Just a little side note, though. He was 17 years old when he was sold into slavery. His father, Jacob, was 108. And guess what? His grandfather, Isaac, was still alive at that point. He was 168. So there is hope for some of us, Terry. We're still getting there. We got a ways to go before we get up and into there. So, but he stayed steadfast and true, even though he was not being treated fairly. He still stuck with it. He stayed with it. And it's kind of a message to us that, are we going to stay with it? Are we going to stick with it when things get rough? Are we going to have ups and downs? Are we going to have as much faith in God when we're down as when we're up? I would pray we did. And then you got the story of Moses, which is really, to me, is very interesting. And again, you don't have to put it up, but it's in Exodus 3:11. And this is when Moses experiences the presence of God in the burning bush. I mean, we've all read about and heard about the burning bush. And with this, he's in the presence of God. God is speaking to him through this burning bush. And what does he do? Who am I, Lord? God says, I'm going to send you to Pharaoh. Who am I? I mean, who am I that you would send me? He said, I've chosen you. Well, I don't talk very good. Shouldn't send me. I don't talk very good. Well, your brother will do the talking, and I'll tell you what to tell him. Well, but what if they don't believe me? The people don't believe me. Well, again, five times in that encounter with the Lord, in the presence of God, five times, he questions and challenges. No, not me. Why me, Lord? Why? Why would you want to use me? It might be a little too hard. Might be a little too rough to do that. I'm not sure I can do that. But then he did, and once he obeyed and stepped out and said, yes, Lord. Okay, yes. What did he do? He parted seas. He brought them to the promised land. And then, of course, there was the book of in Judges 6, 8 through 14 is the story of Gideon. Gideon was the youngest of his father's house. They didn't have a whole lot. They were under domination of the Midianites, and they were being treated very badly. Every time they have a crop, the Midianites would come in and take all their food, take everything. So he's afraid of them. So he hides in the wine press He hides all his grains and he's hiding things from them. And because he has to do something, he can't count on God for everything. He's got to do this himself. But I'm afraid. I'm scared. And God calls Gideon, the lowest of his family, someone who was afraid. He was cowardice. He didn't know what to do. Oh, no, no. And then God brought him forth and built him up and built an army to go out against the Midianites. And there was 300,000 of them. And he had 20,000. And God said, that's too many. Send all the ones that just got married and stuff. They can go home. So half of them went home. Still had 10,000. He said, that's way too many. I don't want you thinking it's you. Get rid of them. Got down to 301, counting himself, with the shofars, the lamps. They blew the shofar, they broke the lamp, and the Midianite 300,000 killed themselves. God just wiped them out. It took them years to get all the spoils out of there. But God used a coward. God used someone who was afraid, but he reached out and he used him. There was a King David. David was a dreamer. He's referred to as, he's a dreamer. He's nothing, he's just a shepherd boy. He won't amount to anything. And turned into be the greatest king that Israel ever had. And then there was this one guy in the Bible. And he was supposed to be serving the people, and he was supposed to be, you know, this leader, if you will. And he violated everything God told him to do. He was a drunken carouser. He was brawling in the streets, drinking, gambling, having wild sex with women, just going crazy. To the point that the enemy cut his eyes out. But he stayed true to the Lord and understood that he was called by the Lord. Even though he broke every rule, everything that he was not supposed to do, he went ahead and he did anyhow. And we all know that when they chained him to the temple of Dagon, take it down, Samson. But as a person, he's not one you would like to have said, oh, that's my buddy over here. Let's go have coffee. He was a wild, wild man. But he knew his strength came from the Lord. He knew where it came from. Even though he broke so many rules, so many things. He took a Nazarite. He was supposed to be a Nazarite vow his entire life. Which no drinking, no smoking, no nothing. You couldn't do any of this stuff. You couldn't even eat a grape. It was all of this was forbidden, and he couldn't cut his hair. Well, that was the one thing he kept was the hair until, of course, he gave in to a woman. There they go again, just like in the Garden of Eden. I don't know. And she cut his hair, and that was his downfall until the Lord brought him back to strength for the purpose he was born for. And then you have, in the book of Judges as well, is a story of Deborah. A woman being a judge over Israel. Unheard of. Women, you know, hey, thought it said, don't talk. No. She was a judge. And the judges of Israel were not only sitting in judgment, they were the generals. They were the ones that went into and led the battles. So here was a woman that God used mightily. They would not go into battle unless Deborah said yes and went ahead. She was a prophetess and a judge over Israel. What God is telling us with that is, just because you're a woman doesn't mean you're less. It doesn't mean you're not as important. He's still calling us. Now I'm gonna be stopping here shortly, but I got to know something. And I think that I want each of you to think about. And after communion, we're going to open the altars up for you to come and come forth and just spend some time with the Lord to figure it out. So when God is saying, hey, come here, I got something for you to do. I want you. I need you. Are you going to say, I can't? I'm not very learned. I'm not very well educated. How can I preach? How can I speak? How can I minister to people? I just can't do it. Is that what you're saying? Or are you saying, well, I'm like Samson. I've been a really wild, corrupt, drunkard, chasing women, smoking cigarettes, and all the other stuff, and really haven't cared about much. How can you use me? You can't use somebody like me. Is that you? Do you see that as what's holding you back? Are you like Moses? Oh no. No. That ain't happening to me. I'm not going out there and serving them. Nope. I don't even like those people. Why would I go in there and serve in that church? Why would I go and do that? Denying, giving excuses. We can all give excuses. Oh, my feet hurt today, so I can't go on a walk around and spread the gospel. My feet hurt too much. Is that you? Are you looking at a excuse or trying to figure a new one that, yeah, you know, work's been kind of hard lately. I've been busy, and you know, I don't have time to read my Bible. I don't have time to go to that Bible study. I just don't have the time. It's not there. Oh, I got to go watch home improvement shows or something on TV though tonight. I'd be doing that fine, but I can't do that right now. I can't serve others. I've just got to take care of myself. Or are we going to be like David? Was just a dreamer. I'm just dreaming about it. There's no way I'd ever do it. I'm just dreaming. Well, I'd love to be up there on that podium. Boy, I'd really give it to him. Well, I don't know. I'm just dreaming about it. Are we just using that for more of an excuses? Or are you like Deborah? Oh, it's a woman. I'm a woman, I can't do it. What can I do? I'm just a woman. What can I do? Nothing. Use it as an excuse. They're all excuses that we want to put into why we can't serve God and do things for him. Could you imagine if the disciples would have said, I ain't going. Jesus calls him, I ain't got time right now. I got to go mend these nets. My dad said I can't leave yet. I got to mend these nets. No, they dropped it and they walked away to come and follow. And those 12 men changed the world. They spread the gospel. They went throughout the entire world spreading the gospel. We always look that Paul came to the Gentiles and spread the gospel. But the other ones were going to the other parts of the world where Jews were at and spreading the gospel there to the Jews as well. Because the Jews were all over the known world at that time, going all the way back to when they were taken captive in Babylon and allowed to go throughout the entire Babylonian and Persian Empire. So they were able to get there all there. They went to these different places. They went to where they felt they were needed to bring that gospel. They didn't just sit around Jerusalem and, you know, eat cake. They were out serving, spreading the gospel, healing the sick, raising the dead, and baptizing. And they had nothing. Do we think that any of them were any better than anybody sitting in this room? No. None of them were better than anybody sitting in this room. But what they did do is they stepped out in faith and said, "Yes, Lord, what do you want? What do you want to teach me? I want to learn. What do you want to teach me?" Are we willing to be teachable? Or are we just going to be, "I can't do that. Oh, I haven't time. There's no reason." We're going to make the excuses. Or are we going to reach out and say, "Yes, Lord, here am I. Send me. I'm ready. Use me, teach me, build me, take me to where you want me to be, and then use me for your glory, not mine. Lord, let me just be used or abused, it doesn't matter. Because it's for you and for your glory, it's not for me, Lord." So the question that I have, we're going to do communion here in just a minute. But the question again that I have is, what is keeping you from giving more unto the Lord? To stepping out and holding that faith and spreading the gospel and doing things for others. Whether it be teaching, preaching, evangelizing, whatever the Lord is calling you to do, what is stopping you from stepping out? Everybody in this body should be involved in some way, shape, or form within this body, within this church, doing something. It doesn't matter if it's cleaning toilets. It's a benefit to the body. It's reaching out. It's saying, "Here am I, Lord, use me. Here am I, Lord. Use me."